Welcome back to Mountain Money. In our Monday morning parade of lawyers, our next guest is Mark Tolman. Mark's an employment attorney from Jones Waldo. As the coronavirus crisis has emerged and people have sort of seen businesses collapse and lots of employees being laid off, a lot of employment issues are coming up from both the employer side and the employee side. And so we're glad that Mark can join with us this morning, talk a little bit about some of these kinds of issues. So, Mark, yeah. I was starting to sort of ask about, you know, the sort of big issues you see on the employment side right now as things are going to emerge. And let's start with the basics. I've shut down my business because I don't have any, because I had to. You know, basically, Summit County told me to shut down. What's my obligation to my employees?
Well, if you've shut down your business, you don't have employees anymore. Your employees at that point would need to go seek unemployment benefits. And that's where your employee resource would be.
Many of the businesses here in the Wasatch Back typically let their employees go in April because of the slowness of the season, or many businesses kind of retain their employees to bring them back up to full speed again in June. How does kind of our typical economic patterns here along the Wasatch Back, which are tourism-based, start to play into the new employment laws?
So the new employment laws that I've been focused so much on recently and advising employers about are the Family First Coronavirus Response Act, the FFCRA, which provides paid leave to employees of covered employers that have fewer than 500 employees for certain COVID-19 related reasons. The Department of Labor has issued guidance, though, that says that employers who are not operating, who have shut down because of not enough work to do, whether traditional seasonal issues like you've just explained, or frankly just because of the economic downturn that we're currently in, that the paid leave provisions that we're discussing here would not be applicable in that situation. Again, for furloughed employees who are on a temporary leave of absence for either seasonal or business slowdown reasons, this paid leave wouldn't be available to them. And here again, the avenue for the employee would be to go and seek unemployment benefits.
And obviously, we're all dealing with a lot of moving targets, and I'm sure you're spending a lot of time reading rapidly to try to keep up on this. But are there other federal programs? We talked about unemployment for businesses shut down. Are there any of the other provisions of the new law that would provide, you know, other kinds of ways to pay employees? Could you sort of essentially reopen, even though you don't have any business coming in the door, to be able to apply for benefits through one of the CARES program?
I suppose you could, there's also the CARES Act, which provides for paycheck loans, which is also a fast-evolving area that one of our tax lawyers could answer questions about. But, you know, again, if you've shut down, you're not operating, probably going to be best just to allow your employees to seek unemployment. But if you are still operating and you've got employees who have a COVID-19-related reason to be home, they're sick, they're caring for someone who is sick, or they have a child who is at home and they need to care for them because of a school closure, this FFCRA program provides paid leave that's paid by the government in dollar-for-dollar tax credits, including accelerated tax credits paid by the IRS if for some reason the paid leave exceeds the amount of the payroll taxes that an employer may pay.
Let's do it, and obviously these things are always hard, but let me ask another kind of a question, which is I think a more typical thing we're seeing in town. I have a restaurant. I had 75 employees. I have now been reduced to curbside only. I now have 8 employees. What are my options with respect to the other 67? Do they have to go on unemployment, or, you know, is there any flexibility to use one of these other programs for that kind of a scenario?
Well, no. Again, there's the CARES Act that provides paycheck loans, including loan forgiveness. But in this FFCRA law would allow you to provide paid leave, but only for the specific enumerated reasons under the laws.
Right.
And not having enough work to do because of an economic slowdown isn't one of the covered reasons. The employee to receive paid leave under these laws needs to be subject to a quarantine or isolation order from the government or their doctor, or is caring for someone who is, or is seeking a diagnosis for COVID-19, or is caring for their child because of a school closure. If they're not doing one of those things or experiencing one of those things, then they would not be eligible for the paid leave. And if they're not eligible for the paid leave, that means the employer is not going to receive the tax credit for it. So they would just be paying out the paid leave in the hopes to seek a tax credit. But if they can't document one of those underlying reasons, they're not going to get the tax credit for it. They're just going to be out that money. So I think if your employees are furloughed because there's not enough work to do, unemployment is really probably their only and best resource.
Can you go into the definition of what furloughed means? Because I think I've heard it in a couple of different ways. And with regards to the situation we're in now, how do you define a furloughed employee?
Furlough generally refers to an unpaid leave of absence where the employer has said, look, I don't have enough work to do right now, but I anticipate having enough work to do later. And so for the next period of time, you're on furlough. I'm not going to be paying you. You can go seek unemployment benefits for that period of time. Typically, furloughed situations may allow an employer to maintain health insurance benefits. But a furlough refers to a temporary unpaid leave of absence. Contrast that with a layoff, which is just a termination. We're downsizing, we're restructuring, we're going to operate with fewer employees, and so you're terminated with no expectation of coming back to work.
But I guess the critical point you just made was that a furloughed employee is eligible to file for unemployment.
Yes, if they're not receiving any compensation, they're not doing any work, they're on an unpaid leave, yes.
They could go seek
unemployment from the Department of Workforce Services here in Utah.
Even if they're, and if they stay on health insurance, can they still seek unemployment?
Yes.
Okay.
One thing that I had read when looking at the new unemployment regulations was that you can apply if your hours have been reduced. So I would assume if a business were to say, we don't have 40 hours for you, but we can drop you to 25, that's not a furlough, that's just a reduction in hours. And then they would be able to apply for unemployment for the remainder?
Yeah, that's right. So, unemployment is a great resource. It's certainly going to be a one that's tapped after
a
few months are over, but that's correct.
Mark, have you run into situations yet where employees, let's say I'm working at a supermarket, and I think that I am inadequately protected from potential infection? Have you seen workplace issues where complaints about safety with respect to exposure to the coronavirus have come up?
I haven't seen those specific questions raised yet, but they're going to be answered in the traditional ways. So if an employee has, say, an underlying health condition, and they come to you and they say, I've got a physical or mental impairment, I need a workplace accommodation, and what I need is personal protective equipment, a PPE, then you would just analyze that under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and you would need to provide the PPE, unless it would be an undue hardship to do so. In fact, it could be an undue hardship to provide a PPE if none are available.
Mm-hmm.
But if an employee does not have an underlying health condition, is complaining to their employer that they just don't feel safe, that's not something that would be protected by the ADA, and that would just be an employee relations issue that the employer should be empathetic and sensitive about and try to address on a case-by-case basis.
That's really interesting. So there's no common law or statutory. I am a healthy 28-year-old, I wish. But assuming I'm a healthy 28-year-old and I am working at the supermarket and there's at the cash register and there's no sort of barrier between me and the customer and I'm feeling like I'm highly exposed to this virus, there's no sort of traditional rubric that would be analyzed on?
Well, I suppose it could be analyzed under a workplace safety issue,
exactly.
So sort of
that's
an OSHA issue,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
OSHA is a set of regulations that requires employers to have safe workplaces. And perhaps an employee could argue in a grocery store setting that, look, if you don't put up this this plexiglass barrier for me, that's going to be an unsafe condition. And if the employer and employee cannot agree on a resolution of that point, I guess the employee's resource would be to go to OSHA. Or UOSH, the Utah version of OSHA, and raise a concern there and see if that state or federal agency agrees with them that that's a required workplace safety issue at this time in our lives.
It's interesting. I haven't read that's been going on anywhere, but somehow I suspect it either is or will be. We have seen rumblings of labor unrest at Amazon warehouses, where there have been sort of instances of infection and employees are complaining of inadequate protection. Have you seen any organized labor kinds of issues vis-a-vis lack of safety and the sort of taking the OSHA thing to a different level?
You know, Roger, we're still pretty early on in this. I have not seen that. There's going to be a wave of litigation, I anticipate, here probably later this year. Labor issues, safety issues, lawsuits over these new paid leave laws not being implemented or executed correctly. So I expect the lawyers are going to be, at least the employment lawyers, are going to be quite busy. But I have not yet seen that type of labor unrest or labor dispute just yet.
It's early. I think you're right. I think that people will find reasons to, you know, rumble over this vis-a-vis legally. But I'm not surprised that we haven't seen it yet. Although it's interesting to me that we haven't seen anything. I guess I wouldn't have been surprised if we saw something out of the state, you know, fairly early on with respect to what are reasonable sort of safety precautions in a workplace. But I take it that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, we just haven't seen that type of regulation yet. We've seen lots and lots of regulations involving paid leave, for example. In fact, over the weekend, I read the Department of Labor's 124-page long set of implementing regulations for these paid leave laws, but I've not yet seen specific regulations that deal with those safety issues, Roger.
Okay. I'm sure you had a lovely weekend. Go ahead.
It was not a great read.
No. I wanted to dip in a little bit more to the family care issue. Many people in our community are living with roommates, or as well, what if someone needed to take care of an individual, a friend, a relative, but they don't live in the same household, or they're not related by blood? Can people still take time off to be able to care for those that they love?
So, yes, and in fact, these paid leave laws are much broader than the traditional Family and Medical Leave Act in terms of the caregiver leaves that are available. Under the caregiver leave, if you are caring for someone who is subject to a quarantine or isolation order, either from the government or a doctor, and the regulations that I read over the weekend use the phrase genuinely need. I think it would apply to someone you're living with, but it doesn't necessarily require a blood relation. So if you are have a genuine need to care for a roommate, these laws would provide paid leave up to 2 weeks, 80 hours for a full-time employee to care for that person that has that genuine need of care.
And then chances are, if you were caring for someone for 2 weeks, you may yourself become infected and then need to be able to take sick leave. That can be added on top of that if it were to occur?
Well, not necessarily. So there is 2 weeks of paid leave available under the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act. It's a total of 2 weeks. There's a variety of reasons for taking it, but you can't stack them.
Okay.
It's 80 hours total. So if you spend 80 hours caring for your spouse or child or roommate because they have a COVID-19 diagnosis, and at the end of that two-week period, you also now have COVID-19, you would not be eligible to receive the paid leave. The paid leave would be exhausted. But having COVID-19 is itself a serious health condition, which qualifies for protection under the standard Family and Medical Leave Act, the FMLA. The FMLA provides up to 12 weeks of unpaid job-protected leave. And so if an employee were caring for someone, their roommate, their spouse, their child, who has COVID, they would get 2 weeks of paid time off for their caregiver time, and then if they themselves are sick, their paid leave would be up under these laws, and they would take up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave under the Family and Medical Leave Act for their own serious health condition. If they've accrued PTO or other paid time off from their employer, they could run that PTO concurrently with that unpaid FMLA leave.
So just to review, though, if you yourself, not talking about caring for someone else, but you yourself were to contract COVID, you are able to recover from it, but then there's that required number of day period in which you could still you still need to be quarantined after. You're saying that you can only get paid for 2 weeks.
That's right. It's wow. Up to 2 weeks, 80 hours total.
Yeah.
Under the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act.
Okay.
It's your full rate of pay capped at $511 a day. Your employer's entitled for a dollar-for-dollar tax credit to offset those expenses. But if you are still sick at the end of that two-week period, your paid leave under the Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act will have been exhausted, but you would still have another 10 weeks of unpaid leave under the Family and Medical Leave Act to complete your recovery. Health benefits need to be maintained during FMLA periods, and again, if you have accrued PTO, you can use that and run it concurrently with your FMLA time.
And just so we know, who's paying for that paid leave? Is that coming from the employer, from the government, or both? Or
well,
both?
First the employer and then the government. So the government, the employer in a sense fronts it.
Right, they front
it. So the employer pays it's $511 per day if you are sick. It's $200 a day and two-thirds of the regular rate for caregiver leave. And then the employer each month looks at the entire enterprise, pays all the wages to its employees, and then has to remit taxes to the federal government in terms of federal payroll taxes. And that's where this tax credit is applied dollar for dollar. So if the employer now needs to go pay the government, the IRS, it's the employer's share of payroll taxes. Let's say it's a $5,000 obligation, to use some round numbers. And during that same period, they paid employees $3,000 in this paid sick leave. Then they would only remit the balance, the $2,000, to the IRS. If for some reason that paid leave exceeded their payroll tax obligation, then there's an accelerated tax credit available where the IRS will remit a check to the employer. The IRS guidelines say we'll do that as soon as possible. We don't know what that means just yet. But so the employer fronts it and then is paid back by the government in that dollar-for-dollar tax credit.
Okay. We've been talking to Mark Tolman of the Jones Waldo firm, who has been shedding some insight on the various labor employee issues surrounding the current crisis. Mark, thanks for spending time with us. Mountain Money. We'll be right back after this.